Accession number 11281, Reel 5.
Mr. Kelly, Reel 5.
And we were billeted in Catania in a convent. Either a convent or a big school. But there were no pupils in there, but there were certainly some nuns of a religious order there. And all that we did there really was a restful type of training, mostly long walks. For example, we went to the top of Etna a few times, and then they ran us to the top of Etna. They made us trot all the way. Of course, that was the commando sort of way of moving you about. What they call speed marches, which is run walk at a very fast pace. So it ran out to about something like about 10 minutes a mile, something like that. So that's the way we spent our time in Catania, and I suppose that in a way they were re-kitting us out and refitting us, and that's what I honestly expected. And then there was some reinforcements came from the UK, and they began to sort out the commando, segregate the commando really, into two parts. And one part I realised afterwards, and I was very glad that I was included in it. At the time, I was very glad that I was included in the part that was eventually due to come home. And being a fairly new person amongst it, you see, and not knowing very many people, I was a bit surprised that I was chosen to come home. And so was my friend Charlie Hall. Because a lot of other people were sent to 40 Commando to reinforce them and to build up the other Marine Commando that turned up out there, 4-3. So we spent the rest of the time in the Catania area as a driver. I spent days and days, it must have been weeks, taking various vehicles from a huge car park. There were English vehicles, and there were an enormous number of German and Italian vehicles. And they were bringing them down to the dockside to be shipped across to Italy as transport. And they'd all been either reconditioned or captured, damaged and repaired, but they were now serviceable, and they wanted somebody to take them down to the docks. So they just used, just asked for volunteers, drivers, and off we went every day, and drove these vehicles down, which is quite good. Quite a novel thing to me, driving left-hand vehicles and things like that. And it was very exciting at times, and on a couple of occasions quite air-raising, because it was quite steep in places, and the road winding, very sharp bends and unfamiliar vehicles. So I enjoyed that. And it was, as I say, it was very relaxing. And I did enjoy the concerts, the singing, and go to these concerts, and the beautiful halls that they had them in, and that were open to servicemen, commandeered actually, for service personnel. Whoever had that idea had a very good one. And it was like commandeering their convent garden, and they're putting troops in there to relax them and take away the tensions from them, and putting on these, the more popular operas and the more popular classical music. And some of the mosaic tiling floors and walls, absolutely fantastic they were. And the churches that were there, and so I enjoyed that part of it, although I did find that the squalor in the streets and the filth sometimes nauseating. And very, well, put you off something terrible. And it made you feel that you could only walk down the main street of the city where there was any resemblance of cleanliness. And then we were moved from there, the people who were going due to go back to England anyway, or come back to the UK, were moved to North Africa, to a place called Bone. And there we did more recreational training and sort of a transit area. And we were with number three commando there. And we played football against them and various games. So it was a case of keeping yourself amused, really, more than anything else. And the first time we sampled the local wares, to our regret, in a great many cases, because I think we all, at some time or other, contacted this dysentery thing, you know, that most uncomfortable nothing, terrible. And then, I think it was the day before my birthday, so it must have been just about the 15th or 14th of December, I was detailed off, together with a Sergeant Hazelhurst, who I found came from Liverpool, who was a huge man. He had arms, he looked like Garth. He had a physique like this Garth thing that's in the papers. Yeah, absolutely fantastic figure of a man. And he came from Liverpool. And he dwarfed me. He made me look like a little tiny child alongside him. And anyway, we went down to this railway siding, and we were told that we were going to guard these Italian prisoners of war who were going to Algeria. So we went all the way on this train to Algiers. And the only thing we had to do was defend ourselves and the Italians from the Algerian people or the Tunisian people and the Arabs. On the way along, because every time that train stopped, they appeared from everywhere, and they took up the stones off the track, and they stoned the train unmercifully. It didn't matter who you were, you got a battering.
What was the cause of their hostility?
Well, because they hated the Italians. The Italians had come across to their country and knocked them about a bit before the last war. So they were all technicians of some sort of another, motor mechanics and all that sort of stuff. And we took them to Algiers and we turned them over to the camp there where they were being employed, fixing up vehicles and doing all this, repairing all the war damage to different things that had been caused. And generally making themselves useful. And it was... By that time, it was Christmas Eve. And we went out, and that was one night where we all got drunk. And I remember, as a driver, the camp commandant, of course it was an English camp that we went to, although there was very few English people in there, but it was an English camp. And we deposited these 2,000 high ties there, and I borrowed a Utilican vehicle off them, a little like van type of thing, the canvas back with seats in it, and I borrowed it off them and we went to town. Oh, we borrowed all the money off them as well. None of us had any money. Pay was only came in drips and drabs, and paydays very far, few and far between. And besides that, we hadn't been paid since we left Bone. And of course, we carried Admiralty passports, you see, pay books, not the Army regulation ones. And he had no means of paying us. And when we asked him to give us the loan of the money, to put the money, and offered him our pay books, we never had pay entered into us in the same fashion as they did, you see, and he couldn't record us. However, he did make some effort to record us somewhere, and he gave us some money, which I don't think we ever paid back. because we left the day after Soatha, and I think he waved goodbye to his money and put it down as a black market, something like that. Anyway, we went into Algiers. We parked the Chilican, and we went to see the sights. And like everything else, it's just a matter of when you're with different people, you go and you drink things and you don't know what you're drinking. And you gradually get merry, and then without you knowing it, you've lost all your sense of control and everything else. Not that any of us were falling all over the place or anything like that, mind you. But the thing was that we completely forgot we had the truck. And we jumped the tram that went winding up the hillside. And we had no idea of where we had to get off, because it had gone dark then. We only knew that this camp was at the top of the hill. And we went up on this tram car. So as far as it was going anyway, as far as up the hill it was going. And then we jumped off, and there was no conductors or anybody else you could bear it away. I don't remember ever seeing one. And there were thousands on it. They hang everywhere on these trams, you know. But I must admit, they were courteous enough to move out of our way. I mean, they let us get on so that we were on the car properly, while they were hanging on all and festooned all over the place. And then when we got to this point, we jumped off and we started to walk up the hill. And we ran foul of the Americans. I don't know for what reason or why, but all I remember was the torches and the American voices. And, what are you guys going to do here? You know, I don't know whether we were singing or not. But they just wailed into us and they just had a go. I remember getting hit across the neck, across the truncheon.
These were MPs, were
they?
Military
police. They turned out to be the police on guard of this building. You know, they had a big building there. They're American barracks, actually. It was an American naval base. But I'm very pleased to say that they didn't knock any of us out, and we knocked some of them out. And we took the batons off some others. And we really gave a good account of ourselves. So much so that we were still standing up there fighting when the rest of when they turned the guard out and everything else. And when they came out, it was all smoothed over, you see. But Sergeant Hazelhurst had a little cut across one eye, you know. And he said, officer said to him, well, come on, we'll take you in. He said, we'll take you to the sick bay and we'll patch your eye up. So we all said, hey, if he's gone, wherever he's gone, we're all gone. So we all went into the sick bay and they patched him up. And then we all ended up all getting drinks off all the Americans when they found out who we were. And they said, no wonder we couldn't put you on the floor. So the next day, we actually left. When we got back to the camp, I don't know what time, it must have been about midday before we woke up, I think. But there was no meals there for us or anything like that in that camp, and we just got up and there was an order that we had to go back down to the docks again. It was then that the major inquired about his vehicle. And of course, we were all looking around blankly, what vehicle? So he said, you borrowed a vehicle off me yesterday. So after a quick search of my kit, I found a key. So I gave him this key. He only wanted a key. It was a tiny key. I gave him the key back. I said, it's down on the square somewhere. So he said, where? I said, I don't know. I said, well, yeah, we're parked on the square where all the other vehicles are parked. He says, the Arabs will have it in bits now. He said, it'll be everywhere. So we left him storming about there over his little vehicle. Don't know whether he got back. And we went down to the docks, just as we were, and there's this liner that pulled in, the Otranto, it's called. And all the rest of the commander were aboard, all the others going back, and it was full of troops, and we were the last ones to go aboard. And we sailed home then, back to the UK. We landed in Scotland. The voyage was quite good, except that for most part we had to, we were still in KD, the khaki shorts and that, and this tropical kit. And it was freezing in the Bay of Biscay, because it was December by the time we got, you know, it was nearly January by the time we got home. I think it was January. And so it was getting a bit on the nippy side, you know, to be running around and those little things. And for some unknown reason, they produced all our kit bags. How they did it, I wouldn't know. But they produced our kit bags, and we changed it to battle dress. Well, you can imagine what the battle dress looked like. It had been stowed away there that long, and God knows, mildewed and everything, you know. And then we got off the boat at Greenock, I think, and straight onto a troop train. And of all places, they took us to Deal. Now, what Deal was thinking about? God only knows. And why there was no communication between our people and them, I don't know. But when we got off, you know, we got off the train. Now, you can imagine. Troop trains, there's nothing you can do. It ran out of water. There was nothing you could do with it at all. It didn't have the usual stops at stations like others did. It stopped way outside stations. And by the time we got all the way down to the south of England, 24 hours later, you can imagine the state of the fellas that are on board that train. And wearing this kit that had been stowed away for months and months and months in the hold of a ship, inside kit bags. And when we got down, it was very mystifying. We got down to the Deal. We came out to the railway station. And we had all these kit bags and things, and we threw them on the trucks. And then they formed us up. And the Royal Marine Band arrived. With all its, in its all its splendour, blues and all this, and marched us down the road, and we must have looked like the rat-tackled army behind us. You wouldn't have said that we were conquering heroes at all. We'd had no time to clean up, and I think once we got to the gate, somebody had told the parade, because just as we arrived, being A troop, we were in the front, the first troops to arrive there. And when we arrived at the gate, I can't say we were marching. We were shambling to the gate. And I felt embarrassed. Oh, God. And you could see the RSM clearing the parade of all the recruits. And, you know, there was tin mugs hanging all over the place. And all sorts of bits of gear loafing about. And after time, see, you were allowed to use whatever gear you liked in a commando, as long as it was comfortable and serviceable. So all the parade ground stuff went by the board, you know. So we must have looked a shocking sight when we got down to Deal. Anyway, they cleared the parade ground, and we were given a meal. And, of course, everybody tidied up and cleaned up, and there was electric irons there. And the next day, I was kitted out with another half a dozen. Yeah, all brand new equipment, except green berries. They didn't have green berries. So we had our own green berries, you know, the old ones. But they were all bleached. And they weren't the green that you have, the newly issued ones. They were very, very faded green. Anyway, we were sent home on leave. And we had 14 days leave. And instead of reporting back to Deal, we reported back to Ramsgate. And we met at Ramsgate, and went to some part of the Civic Hall, and they gave us lists of landladies, and we lived in civvy billets. And that was the commando thing, that apparently, you know, living in civvy billets. So we went to excuse me, Charlie Hall, and I went to Mrs. Hunt in Muir Road, 61 Muir Road, and we stayed with her, you know. And when all the other lads came back off leave, we had all been round and selected billets for them. Asked these people would they have them, you know. And they just, we just had their names, and they just off they went to these very houses. And it was very nice to be there at the beginning of the year, you know, which it would be. It'd be there about the end of January by that time. And we stayed there for possibly a couple of months, in which time the training became more intense. And we made several trips to Scotland where you did really get hammered. And the training did become very, very hard. And a great deal of it was, of the time, was spent shooting. And you could actually take a box of ammunition out with you. And whatever your weapon you fired, and fired at your heart's content. And we were just firing at playing cards. You know, they knocking up the spots off the playing cards with rifles and things like that. And I was still a Marine and still a rifleman, of course, at that time. And, you know, it was a very enjoyable training, very enjoyable indeed. And in that time, I did, in the time that we were training in England and reforming in England, and new recruits were coming in, and we did courses then as well. And one course that I always wanted to go on was the parachute course, but I never got chosen for that. I went on a mining course to the Royal Engineers to learn all about mines and how to be placed, and enemy mines in particular. And another course I went on to, again to the Royal Engineers, was flamethrowers. I didn't like that one at all. That's a horrible weapon at the best of times, that. And I certainly didn't relish being a person about to use it.
Because you thought it was inhuman.
Yes, I didn't like it at all, that one. So that's how we spent our time. Then we spent a lot of time with the naval, with the Royal Artillery. They had they used to be the Ack-Ack guns. They were posted along the coast and the promenades in Ramsgate. And we used to go and do gun drill with them, you know, learn about the guns and how to spike them. And then we went with the MTBs for cruises in the channel, which was very good, very nice as well, except when the weather was rough. But they were very cramped, those little boats, but they're very good fellows. They were very brave lads, those MTB fellows. And that was the way the training went. And then we moved down to we went to Hastings then. We made a move down to Hastings, and again it was intensive training and became more physical. And we did a couple of exercises in Scotland again, but these were exercises with landings. And one of them was they had the whole lot in. They had the Navy involved in, you know, firing at the shore. They had the aircraft bombing it. And, you know, it was all there for you to see, every aspect of the combined operation. And then, you know, your own landing it incorporated into it. And so it was a very interesting time, and time passed very quickly. It didn't seem as though we'd been back in the UK very long. And down at Hastings, we became more and more aware of the fact that the reason why we were back in England was to very soon to be living across the channel somewhere. So it became very, very apparent to us. And they gave us new equipment to use. Canvas trolleys to carry ammo and things like this. We used to have, they organised races up and down the prom. And these things came in two halves. They're very light. It's just like a long arm, shaped slightly like an elongated S, with a handle at one end, you know, like just like a bicycle handlebar with a grip on it, and a wheel on the bottom. And they had, your mate carried the other part like that. And one of the parts had two folding arms with two wing nuts on the end and a canvas flap in between. And when you dropped them down, the two arms fitted into the corresponding slots on your mate's piece of equipment. And you just screwed up the wing nuts tight, and you had two little wheels, two handles, and this little tray in the middle, the canvas tray in the middle, to throw stuff in. And it had ropes on the end, long thin ropes, which somebody could pull with you. So they were part of the equipment, and there's folding bikes, Bangalore torpedoes, all sorts of equipment like that. And of course, living in Civvy Billets, your relationship with people was a little bit different to a normal soldier in the barracks, because you lived with them. And, a lot of the things that you did, they were watching you doing it, and they were mystified by what you were doing and why you were doing it. And they wanted to know why. And it's sometimes a little bit hurtful to be able to say, oh, well, I don't really know. When you should have really said, well, it's something to do with what we've got to do in the future, and we can't spread it about. And in some cases, we didn't know. It's quite true, but I think sometimes they felt that they were being left out of something, you know, and yet they were quite so close to everything else, because you fell in the morning at the bottom of the street. Your company office was in the snug or the parlour of a pub, and our stores was a disused shop on the shopping front. So that was full of ammunition and stuff like that, you know, and all the spare gear that you might need. So they were never very far away from it, you know, and some of the things that you did upset them in as much as that they knew what it was for, and it hit, you know, because they were so close to you, I think they felt that, you know, it was a wrench to them, you know, and they would feel it, and I think they did. Well, one of the aspects of that was that the day before we moved, although we didn't know we were moving, the day before we moved, we were issued with ammunition. Now, we often did that, and they didn't tell you, you know, why they did it. And, you know, a day or two later, you might go field firing, you see. So you had all the ammunition that you wanted. But this day, they issued us with 36 grenades and all the paraphernalia of war. And because I was a Bren gunner then, and Charlie was my number two, Charlie Hall. And because I was a Bren gunner, and my ammunition went into magazines, they gave me my ammunition in cardboard boxes. And I don't know who designs these things, but the box contained about 20 or 30 rounds of 303 ammunition. And it was the most flimsiest box you could ever think. It was made of thin, light cardboard. And it had no strength in it whatsoever. A matchbox was 10 times stronger than it. And they put all this ammunition in. And when we came home, of course, we had them draped all over, magazines stuffed inside your blouse, the extra magazines that you'd have to carry. 36 grenades festooned, hanging all over you. and smoke grenades. And then Charlie Hall was...